Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Fear is a universal feeling we all share at every age. From toddlers taking their first steps to adults standing at life's biggest crossroads. It's not something we outgrow, but something we can learn to walk with. What if fear isn't the enemy but a compass? What if movement could unlock the very mindset shifts we have been looking for? Welcome to Discovering Journeys, and I'm your host, Sujala, where we explore the diverse journeys. My guest is Sabrina Del Duca, a mindset coach and dance educator who helps people, both adults and teens. Together, we will talk about why fear shows up and what it is telling us, how to listen to emotions as information, and how physical movement can gently unlock the mental and emotional stagnation. It's a reflective conversation that blends both the body and mind, and it might shift how you approach your next step. Let's understand. Hello, Sabrina. Happy to have you on Discovering Journeys podcast. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Sujala. So happy to be here. What an honor.
Let's begin this conversation on fear. You have spoken about embracing fear. I want to understand, how have you built this relationship or understand fear instead of fighting it?
What a great question. And I love that this is where we're starting. For me, it was, as you mentioned, the understanding. Once I understood that fear was just my body and my brain's way of protecting me, then it allowed me to see it in a different way. So for example, when it comes to our nervous system, when it comes to our brain, you know, the one function is really to keep us safe, to keep us in survival mode. And that's why we have these sensations that we don't have control over that occur when we're faced with a situation that could feel unfamiliar. And in caveman times, it was very necessary to have these alerts because we needed to obviously fight for our survival or flee, right? Like if you think of nervous system responses, fight, flight, freeze, there's also fawn now. So there's different ways that our body reacts to these circumstances that are outside of our control. But as we've evolved as humans, we've been faced with less physical survival fear, meaning like there's not a saber-toothed tiger around the corner about to attack us. But those kind of fears have been replaced with more mental fears, in the sense of the fear of belonging, the fear of judgment, the fear of just being out of your comfort zone, as we call it. And so the brain is still wired to sense anything that is unfamiliar and flag that this could become a potential threat. And then what happens with us is that sometimes we believe it and we say, oh my goodness, this potential threat of me trying to do something new is stretching me too far. So once I understood that the brain, the nervous system, that sense of fear is just there to alert me, to protect me, and to just be like, hey, Sabrina, hold on. This is new for you. This is unfamiliar. It could pose a potential threat. Instead of listening to it automatically, because your body will kind of move through with those emotions, I allowed myself to pause, to really take that space so that I can access the cognitive part of my brain that has the thinking ability to really ask myself and question that fear. Am I actually in danger? And usually the answer is no. Most often, I hope the answer is no. But then I question the fear. What am I afraid of? Is it actually going to put me in a situation that I'm going to regret or that I'm going to not benefit from? And usually when you start to question the fear, you start to see that it really just is a reaction to you doing something that you're not comfortable with yet. And when you peel back those layers and you ask yourself, like, okay, well, this is actually exciting. Like, I see it as exciting because that means that if I have this fear, it's because I'm trying to do something different. I'm trying to change. I'm trying to evolve. And if I look at it through that lens of excitement, then I'm more likely to move forward. So for me, fear is just information. And once we embrace what that fear is trying to tell us, then we have an awareness where we can move forward with some action that's a little more aligned and understood when it comes to what it is that we want to do.
I believe there are different kinds of fear, like one which comes with intuition, emotional fear, and you have this physical fear. I mean, how can we understand that what is helping us and protecting us and not get, you know, stuck in this fear of, okay, I understand I have fear and sometimes we live with it. How can we help ourselves to just slightly shift the compass?
The first thing is becoming aware of it, as I mentioned. So it's being aware and even trying to think and sense where in your body do you feel the fear. Then the next important step, I would say, is to accept it. Because often we don't want to feel the fear, so we resist it and we push back on it. And it actually makes it stronger, right? It's a disservice that we do to ourselves. So I think an important step here is to really embrace that fear and to be like, okay, fear is here. And I would even go further to say, thank you. Thank you for being here because you're doing your job at protecting me. But do I really need you? That's where the questioning comes back. Like, what kind of fear am I feeling right now? Is it physical? Do I need to run? In that case, thank you, fear, because you're letting me know I need to run right now. Or is it just an emotional fear? Is it something that I'm creating in my mind, a story that I've associated with? Like, often what our brain does is it looks for patterns, right? It looks for something that is familiar so that it can start to make associations. So if there's a situation where, and I'll bring it up often, the fear of being judged, right? Because that's a very common one. So the fear of others' opinions, of being judged, of not belonging, right? That lack of connection. Your brain will try to justify your fear by thinking of examples in the past where this has happened. And once you're aware that that's all the brain is doing is just trying to get you into your familiar zone, we call that comfort zone, then you have an opportunity to say, okay, well, this is how my brain is working, and thank you for that, but is this where I want to live? Is this where I want to stay? And then you have a choice. And once you empower yourself with that choice, the third step is to take action with the fear, is to lean into the fear, to do it scared, to do it anyway. Because once you've been aware of, okay, what is this fear doing here? What is it trying to tell me? You accept that it's here and you thank it for being here. Then it's moving forward with it. It's leaning in. And I feel like that takes practice and that will come. And that will allow you to even show yourself that you have the resilience to be able to move forward, even if you're scared. Because it's not true that people who make big moves, who take big risks, who make bold decisions, it's not true that they lack fear. They move forward with the fear. They know how to work with that fear to be able to help themselves to take those steps. So I think it's important there to know that fear is here to just give us information, and we embrace it. And we embrace it because it's part of the human experience. It's part of our emotions. It's part of our just being here and having this beautiful awareness of all that is available to us. But then the important thing is to take action.
Yeah. Speaking of the action, you know, it's such a hard thing to do when you are crippled with fear. It always, the fear, you can be aware, but the action, I feel, is the hardest part of it. Because you have to put yourself in an uncomfortable position and then it always triggers you and your immediate action is to avoid it.
Absolutely, because you don't want to feel that fear. And usually what you're scared of or what you're avoiding will actually happen. Like the strategy you're using to avoid that thing that you want is actually calling it in, if we think of it that way. So what I also like to say is that everything you do want is on the other side of that fear. So understanding, awareness, mindset is really, really a crucial component to this conversation, because I think when we understand fear and we see it in a different way, then we're able to make different decisions when it comes to fear. But in terms of action, I feel like we also need to understand that small steps can help us. You don't have to take the leap. Like, you don't have to jump off the cliff. You can maybe take the stairs down, kind of thing, like one step at a time. Anything that works for you to just get you moving forward. Because I feel like that's where the momentum will build. That's where your confidence will build. And it'll allow you to keep going. Once you can look back and prove to yourself that, like, hey, I can take those small steps, even if I'm scared, that I'm moving forward regardless of the fear that's crippling me. The other thing I would suggest is to always relate it back to your why. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this? If this is a goal that you want and you're crippled by fear to move forward, I would invite you to just question and get back into curiosity and say, why is it that I want this? And let that help drive you forward. Once we get back to that intention and really the reason why we're putting ourselves in this uncomfortable position, then it helps us to understand that, like, okay, this is something I really want. Let me get uncomfortable to get to that goal.
Now we understand. I mean, if we have understood that fear is a kind of protection for ourselves, what are some of the signs which we can think to know that it is a sign of growth and not we are actually in danger?
I think it's understanding where the fear is coming from. And the more you tune in, the more you can kind of discern that fear from danger versus fear from just growth and discomfort. I think if it's fear in terms of like danger, there's a visceral reaction. Like, you're going to feel it much deeper. Like, there's something in your body that allows you to understand that, like, your life is threatened, versus the discomfort of just putting yourself in a vulnerable position. A lot of it can show up as anxiety, as nervousness, feelings in the pit of your stomach. Usually, like, you know, our stomach is where we get nervous when we're worried, when we're focused on how things will turn out. You know, we, like, our stomach turns, or we have those like butterflies that don't seem to be fluttering in a good way, right? Like, all of those little feelings. The other things that could happen is that you can really get into a freeze state. You can get into a state of just like disassociating and not knowing how to move forward. So I think it's just maybe noticing your own patterns and how you've been faced with fear in the past, and trying to maybe just notice for yourself too, like, when you were actually in danger. And I hope this hasn't happened to many people, but like, if you were actually in a situation of your life was in danger or you were threatened, how did your body react versus just doing something uncomfortable or putting yourself out there or getting vulnerable? Because then you can kind of start to sense within you, what are those subtle differences? And even allowing yourself to zoom out and see the bigger picture and rationally, I know it's hard in those moments because you are taken over by your body's reaction. So there is no rational cognitive thinking. But if there's an ability to put space between yourself and the situation, to breathe, to take a few deep breaths, to allow yourself to come back into the present moment, and then ask yourself these questions, right? Like, am I safe? Physically, is it just something that I'm uncomfortable doing because I've never done it before? Is it me putting myself out there that I have maybe a fear of judgment, right? So it's just being aware for yourself where this fear is coming from. And I think, like I said, it could be different for everyone, but it's always those like feelings in your body that are alerting you that something is going on.
Is there a correlation between anxiety and fear?
I understand it to be worrying about a future event that has not happened. Anxiety, you know, the way that I've seen it in clients and sometimes for myself is that when I'm caught up worrying about how things are going to turn out or not turn out, then I become anxious. Anxious because I have zero control over that outcome. And the body is gripping and trying to figure it out and trying to cling to a solution to reassure us that there is some certainty there. But I think the anxiety is coming in because we have no certainty over certain situations. We have no assurance. And so that's where perhaps we can start to loosen the grip of how things need to work out and just start to insource and just trust that we will make the best of it, or we will take the proper steps forward. And not really worry about how things are going to turn out. that's the way I see it, because I think, yeah, anxiety is really that gripping feeling that like it has to be this way.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
How would you explain to maybe someone who is around 10 years old, you know, they have simple fears like dark, height. How would a parent can they understand that they're scared? Me being a mom myself, I also struggle saying that, no, you have to take small step. And the question is like, why?
Yeah.
I am scared and I know it.
Well, like, what would we say to a 10-year-old? That's a great question. I would say, you know, if we take the example of being afraid of the dark. So I would even ask, like, what are you feeling right now? Like, what are you feeling? And then the child, I don't know, but maybe you can use your example for me. Like, if I ask you, Sujal, if you're a 10-year-old child and I say, what are you feeling right now in the dark? Like, what is it that's scaring you?
You know what? When I was 10, I was scared of dark. So it's like somebody's going to come out from the dark, a mysterious person, and going to just take me away.
Okay. So I would validate. I'd be like, okay, I understand. That is scary. But what would make you feel better right now? What would help you to not feel like someone's going to come out of the dark right now?
Light and somebody being there next to me.
Perfect. Okay, so let me stay with you here until you fall asleep. Let me put a little nightlight for you so that you could see your surroundings. And just, let's just see. Let's just see how it goes so that you can feel safe. And I think, you know, feeling safe is what I'm saying to you as an adult now. But I think that's what they're looking for, right, is the feeling of safety. And so if you can, number one, validate their fear. Because I think that's where sometimes we forget that all emotions are welcome. And so to feel or to be told like, ah, don't be afraid. There's nothing there to be afraid of. Then they kind of question.
Doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work at all. Because then they, and then on top of it, they start to question their own feelings. Like, well, it's wrong to feel fear. Like it's wrong to be afraid of something that's not there. So I would suggest to validate, like, yeah, you're right. It is scary. You can even say to them, like, even for you, thinking back to you as a child, like, yeah, me too, I was scared. So I understand, like, it's scary to be in the dark because we can't see anything. So you kind of help them understand that, like, oh, I have a right to be afraid right now. But then you want to bring them back to safety. And that's why you ask them, like, you don't want to assume that lights will help them. Like, maybe they want you there instead with the lights. Like, so as you mentioned, so I would say, I would ask them, what would help you right now? Like, what would make you feel good? What would make you feel nice and happy? And let them tell you. And if they don't know, I would offer information at that point. But I think there's a strong a way to empower them to become aware of their own feelings and how they can start to manage it themselves, so that when they are afraid, they start to insource and say, well, what do I need to help me get through this fear? And then they ask for it, and then you're there to give it to them. And then they feel like, okay, well, when I'm afraid, I can ask for things and I will receive them and I will feel okay. Right? Like, I would, so there's a cycle there that we're building within them, that they can understand that when they do have these feelings, first of all, there's nothing wrong with them. It's normal. And they're not alone. And support is the most important. When they're connected to someone, it helps them to move through that fear, to lean on someone else for that connection, for that guidance, and be able to move through.
And you work a lot with emotional resilience. If you have to explain this word, emotional resilience, to a person who has never heard it together, what would you, or how would you explain it?
Emotional resilience is the ability to understand and allow yourself to feel your emotions and learn from them, to grow from them. Often when it comes to emotions, we fear them. It's not our fault because we've never been taught how to feel them in a safe way. So we push them down, we bottle them, we avoid them, we repress them. And that only adds to the buildup of emotion, which over time, these emotions need to come out. They need to move. If you look at the word emotion, emotion, it's energy and motion. So if we think of it that way, that these emotions are just here again as information, they're here to tell us something about ourselves and they need to move through our body. Scientifically, it used to be 90 seconds, and I think it's even decreased in the most recent studies, but emotions need to be felt for 90 seconds and then they move through you. So if we think of emotions as temporary ways to give us information and we allow ourselves to feel into it for maximum 90 seconds, then they're gone. They release. But what we do is we don't want to feel them. We avoid feeling them, so we push them down, or we bring them up into our minds and we start overthinking and we create stories around them. So we actually feel them for longer than we need to. And that is the causing of our own suffering, thinking about the emotions, right? Like we're thinking about emotions instead of feeling them. And then we're suffering in ourselves because we're propelling the situation. We're making it bigger than it needs to. So the way I like to view emotions is, again, they're here to just give us information. Anger is telling us that things are not fair. Fear is telling us that there's protection, as we spoke about. You know, I'm talking about the emotions that we usually don't want to feel. But sometimes people don't want to feel love or joy or happiness because they're afraid that it's going to go away if they feel it.
Mm.
But I think, yeah, I've heard that a lot where when something joyful or happy happens, people are afraid of really feeling into it because they're afraid that if they feel it, it'll be gone. So I think when it comes to that, even if I use that analogy of it moving through us, there's still a recognition there. There's still like my body knows how to feel happiness. And even if I'm not gripping it and holding on to it tightly, because it's felt it before, it could feel it again. So trust that your body can recognize it, that you can feel it again and again, and that you don't have to hold on to these feelings that you feel are flighting, that you'll never feel them again. So it kind of goes both ways. If we label them positive and negative, and that's another thing too that we do, we label them good or bad, whereas emotions are just information.
But why do we suppress our emotions?
Because we're afraid to feel them.
Just because we are afraid.
Think of pain. Think of betrayal. Think of disappointment. Those are icky feelings. Those make us very uncomfortable.
Yeah, it puts us down so much.
Oh, yes.
On the contrary, we are holding on to it.
Exactly. We're holding on to it. So we're actually making it last longer than it needs to. And that's the reframe that I want to offer everybody, where the very thing we're avoiding feeling, we're holding on to and making us feel it for longer. So what if, and just test it out for yourselves, try it out, explore. What if you allowed yourself? What if you accepted that betrayal, that disappointment for the few seconds, minute that it needs to last? What if you allowed yourself to just really feel it and accept it and be like, okay, this is what's happening. And just notice what happens in your body. Yes, you will be uncomfortable, but guaranteed, and I promise you this, if you don't bring it back up to your head, if you don't try to like avoid it or hold on to it, it's going to pass. And you might need to do it a few times. Doesn't mean it's not going to come back, right? It'll come back, but at least you're not holding onto it. At least you're not making it into this big story that ends up just blowing up. At least you're not avoiding it, right? It's you're accepting it. You're dealing with it.
What happens? Because see, suppression of emotions is a very common thing across cultures. What happens to our body and mind when we suppress it? Hey listener, thank you for tuning into Discovering Journeys. If you're enjoying this conversation, I would love for you to take a quick moment to follow the podcast on Instagram so you never miss these incredible stories and learnings. Also, please consider sharing it with a friend or leaving a review, as it goes a long way in helping more people discover this podcast. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
Visually speaking, let's look at emotions again in the form of energy, because that's what they are. We're all energy. We're made of energy. Emotions are energy as well. Think of it as your body is a vessel. It's a container. When you suppress or repress emotions, you start to pack things in and things start to get stuck. So as a container, you're filling and you're holding on to emotions that no longer serve you, and they start to pile up. And at one point, you're going to have no room left in your container of a body, of a mind. And one of two things can happen. Usually you erupt, because things need to come out, right? Emotions need to move. The other thing that happens is that you start to dissociate. You start to no longer become connected. Things are not flowing. You don't feel creative. You don't feel yourself. You don't feel like you can even just understand or feel emotions anymore, because everything is so packed so tightly in your body that there's no room. There's no space. There's no space to let anything flow, to let anything new even come in, because you're just stuck with all of this. The other analogy I love to use is baggage. Think of luggage. You're carrying around these huge pieces of luggage on your back. And the more you pile in those emotions, like, I don't want to deal with the emotion, let me just pack it in my bag, the heavier that bag becomes, the harder it is for you to move forward, to walk forward, because you're carrying this heavy, heavy load. Whereas you can start to release those emotions one by one. You can start to lighten your load so that you can breathe deeper, so that you can make better connections, so that you can allow yourself to be in the moment, to see opportunities, to be in that flow state that we love to say so much, because that's where the presence is. That's where the creativity is. So the challenge and the problem with packing your emotions and not allowing yourself to feel is that over time, you get stuck.
Does it also have an impact on the decisions or choices we make in our lives when we are suppressed and we are carrying this baggage?
Oh, absolutely. Because I believe that you're carrying this baggage, you're stuck with energy that's not moving. Maybe you're questioning yourself. Maybe there's all this self-doubt because there's no space for you to listen to what actually you want. Maybe all these emotions are old stories about what other people want. And so when it comes to decisions, you're kind of going through the narrative of all of these emotions that are stuck in your body, of everyone else's opinions, everyone else's decisions. And so definitely, I feel like there's no space for you to just connect with yourself, that inner voice, that intuition. Your inner voice is silenced when all of these emotions are stuck in your body. There's no space for you to hear them, to feel them. And so I think it does have a huge impact. And I speak from experience, because I was someone who did repress my emotions for the longest time, and I bottled everything up, and I became disconnected from myself, from my intuition, from my voice. I just kind of, the best way I could describe it is I was on autopilot. I was just going through the motions, not questioning decisions, realizing that maybe those decisions were not right for me. Like, there's not even an idea or a notion that there could be something different. You're just going through the motions. So I think once for me, I started to unpack those emotions and see that there were different ways of responding. There were different ways of being. Then I was like, oh my goodness, well, I could actually make better decisions that align with who I am now. And I don't have to follow the path that I was always on. And I was able to come to that conclusion because I was able to make space within me to be able to listen and say, like, okay, what is it that I truly want? And so it all comes down to space and energy and flow and movement. And if everything is stuck, there's nothing new that can come of it. Like, think of it also as a river flowing, right? Once you have a block, once you have a log, that clogs the river, you have a dam there, everything starts to pile up and there's no flow. There's no ability to really just be in the moment, to graze the surface, to pick up what comes along. You're just kind of stuck in a stagnant pool of water.
Yeah. I can resonate with you very well because even I have suppressed my emotions for a very long period of time, went into a survival mode, and then something realized and I started my self-healing journey. And the unpacking of so many things was terrible and it took a long time, but it was worth it. Now I can say, I don't know how far I am in this journey as well, but I can definitely feel lighter. So, and I have also figured out that not only your decisions and your choices, even the people around you are also very different. When you are suppressing yourself, you attract also the people not so right for you because you yourself are not right with yourself. It was one of the biggest learning for me.
Something you said so beautifully that I just want to address quickly. You were open to doing the work, as painful as it was, and you even felt that it was worth it in the end because you felt lighter, your relationships changed, right? Your relationship with yourself changed. So I think for everyone listening, that's beautiful insight because it is possible to do the work. It is possible to unpack. Know that it will come with resistance. It will come with challenges. It will come with difficulty. But in the end, it's worth it because you get to just change your view on yourself, which impacts those around you, which impacts your life as a whole. So thank you for sharing because I think it's important for people to hear.
Thank you. Thank you. And then you work with teens as well. So are there any patterns you have noticed, like how they process the fear and other emotions, you know, compared to us adults? Because when we were growing up, there was not much of talks on these. But in the last decade, especially post-COVID, things have opened up for good. So
yes, for teenagers, I've been working with teens for a very long time, pre and post-COVID. And I see a lot of changes, but I think something that remains consistent, teenagers are just trying to figure it out. Like us, all humans, right? We're just trying to figure it out. And what happens with teenagers is that things are uncertain and emotions are heightened because of the changes that are occurring in their bodies, right? At a hormonal level, there are things that are amplified. So when teens are labeled as dramatic, I mean, I think that's really going to extreme to say that. I think they're just trying to feel their emotions in the way that feels safe for them. And that's the moment that we need to start learning to feel our emotions, because that's where I would have loved to have tools to know how to feel my emotions in a safe way. It would have helped me in my life moving forward. So I think that is a pivotal moment, kids and teens, to help them try to understand that all of your emotions are welcome. They're all valid. The minute we label them as dramatic, we are painting them in a negative light. And then they're viewing their emotions as too much, or I can't express myself in this way because then I'm going to be judged. So for me, when I work with them, and I work with them as a dance teacher, but I do bring a lot of the mindset emotional work in the classes. I have no choice. It's right there. So it's an opportunity for me to help them and address it. And from the perspective of just being open to welcome whatever they're feeling, for them, it's a safe space, meaning they know that they can come in and just be themselves. I'm not enforcing positivity. I'm encouraging optimism, but I'm not enforcing positivity. They come to me and they're like, oh, I had a bad day. And I'm like, let's talk it through. And if they're like, oh, I don't want to talk about it, I'm like, okay, let's dance it. Let's move through it, right? So honoring how they're feeling and not saying, oh, I'll leave it at the door, because that's how I was taught when I entered my dance class as a kid, like leave your problems at the door. And I understand the concept behind it because you don't want to bring negativity into the classroom. At the same time, you're learning to separate yourself. You're learning to suppress it and repress it. I now have learned from that personal experience. And instead, I say, bring your problems with you and let's work through them. Bring whatever you're feeling with you because it's valid. because you're a teenager and you're feeling a lot of things. You have stress. You just had a test. You think you failed. Your parents are putting pressure on you. You're discovering new relationships, friendships. There's betrayal. There's, you know, just navigating so much. So much is happening in their teenage years, that if we start to compartmentalize and label emotions as good or bad, it's doing them a disservice, because it's then setting them up to do that for the rest of their life. So for me, I welcome all emotions. You're crying, let's go. Cry it out. And then usually it takes 5-10 minutes. They get their emotions out, right? They're like, they cried. And I'm like, okay, are you okay? Like, do you feel like we can start dancing and moving through it? And the movement helps, because again, coming back to energy. The minute you start to move your body, and it doesn't have to be dance, it could be walking, it could be yoga, it could be stretching, it could be going to the gym, but physically, once you start to move your body and move that energy, things will just feel lighter. You're going to help that process of moving those emotions through your body by you physically moving. And so that's why I love having dance as an outlet. And I didn't realize, for me as a teenager, how important it was. Like, I didn't know how to articulate my emotions. No one ever taught me, but I knew that I had my dance class and I felt better all the time after. And I feel like these kids too, right? They come in and they're stressed about the test they just had, the argument they just had with a friend, a situation occurs. They come to class, they're distraught. I meet them where they're at and I say, I welcome this feeling. Let's embrace it. But now let's help ourselves move through it. So do we need to cry? Do we need to run around? Do we need to dance? Like, what is it that we need to do to move through it? But I think honoring it and acknowledging it instead of leaving it at the door is a huge shift that will just help them to understand that, like, it's okay what I'm going through.
You teach what kind of, is it a free form of dance or a movement? What is it?
It's jazz dancing.
So, lovely.
Yeah, so there's technical, there's choreography. Obviously, the technique side is more precise. And then when it comes to choreography, we start to explore a little more.
I would have definitely attended your class.
I would have loved that. I would love that if you were closer. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you teach also the teens and the adults for the dance? Okay. What have you observed between the difference between teens and the adults with their movement?
That's a great question. The difference would be the intention. However, I do see more similarities when it comes to teaching teens and adults. There is a certain level of awareness or lack thereof that you have in your body. And I don't want to generalize, because I think it depends on the person, because I've seen teens and adults both, depending on who they are, be very comfortable in their body and be very uncomfortable in your body. So I think there is a similarity there of just like you as a person and the relationship you have with yourself. When you come into dance class, my goal is to help you to embrace your body, to build confidence, to be able to move without feeling that you're judged. When I teach, it's more of like, how does that feel to you? How does that feel in your own body? And don't look at those around you who maybe have more experience or who are at a different level, right? Like, it's more for yourself. How is this feeling for you? For me, it's more important how it feels and how it looks. And yes, once we, if we're putting on a show on stage, which I do with my teens, then it's like, okay, we perfect the details. But at the same time, it's always about how does it feel in your body? And even when I build choreography, when I dance it, I need to feel a certain way. And that's what I try to bring to everybody that I teach. Like, I want you to feel some kind of empowerment, some kind of strength, some kind of resilience, or maybe I want you to feel into a certain emotion. But I think that similarity is really just building the confidence within you to know that you're capable of doing this and to learn how to channel your emotions through your body.
Why does this movement, or especially dance or any kind of physical activity, matters so much in your emotional processing?
Because again, it helps you to get unstuck, to get that energy within you free, to get it activated, right? So a lot of the time, you know, the prescription, if I want to say that, to anything you're feeling bad about in terms of, you know, anxiety, depression, a lot of the times it's get out there and move your body. When you change your physical state, then your physiological state will change, right? Your mental state will change. When you start to get that energy within you activated that's been stuck for so long, then it starts to move things around, even if it doesn't have much space. If we go back to the analogy with the container, even if you're full of energy and you're full to the brim, or you know, you have those bags on your back that you're carrying all this baggage, even then, once you start to move, you start to know how to start to release some of those things without even consciously being aware. But you start to get that energy within you just flowing in a way that it just makes you feel better.
I have like always I've asked this. I'm like, why do I feel better? Yes, to take that first step is hard when you don't want to. But once you start moving, it's like, yeah, you just feel so light and you don't want to stop. The deeper you're feeling horrible, the more you can actually exert it out, I feel.
Absolutely, yeah. And how often do we not want to go to the gym, or we not want to take that first step, or you don't want to go where you need to go, but after the effect, you're like, oh my goodness, I feel so good. Let's do it again. Yeah. If you're someone who's an overthinker, you're always stuck in your head, it just allows you some space to not be in your head. It gets you in the present moment. It gets you in the here and now, focusing on, you know, the dance step, focusing on the yoga position, focusing on, you know, what weights you're lifting at the gym. And I feel like the benefit of being in the present moment, again, you release all of those thoughts in your mind, that overthinking, you stop worrying about what's going to happen later, what happened before, and just being in the present moment allows you to appreciate where you are right now. And I feel like that is the extra benefit that I hadn't mentioned yet, whereas you just have to have that presence. And in this presence, in this moment right now, it's all we have. It's all we have access to. That's where joy lives. It's right now. It's not later, because you're thinking about it. You're worrying about it. Will I be joyful? It's not in the past, because it already happened. It's right now.
Yeah, truly. What are some of the gentle ways an, you know, elderly adult or, you know, a bit older people can do to move their body if they're not used to it?
Walking. Don't underestimate the power of just going for a walk. If you can go for a walk in nature, even better. It helps to ground you. It helps to just bring you in the moment. If that's not accessible to you, walking.
You can even walk at your home.
Yeah, exactly. Walk around your home. I think that is a beautiful place to start, because it's accessible, because it's something you already know how to do. You don't have to learn anything new.
Is there a practice you teach your teens that, you know, we also as adults, should we learn it or unlearn it and relearn it? What is it?
I think there's a lot of unlearning to do as adults, definitely. We've been conditioned, you know, we've been trained in a certain way for so long. There's definitely unlearning to do as an adult. I think for teens, it's learning how to accept and validate your emotions. And I would say the same thing for adults. It's unlearning that your emotions are labeled as good or bad, and learning that you can choose to accept all of your emotions as they are. And that's, again, your choice. You get to choose how to move forward, and you get to choose how to embrace them. And there's some power in there, because you're not deeming yourself as good or bad. You're kind of welcoming everything as the human experience.
Yeah. You know, these are the topics and we can always keep talking about it, I believe. And it's such a relatable topic.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
To everybody in their own way. So, but I'm going to end this episode, okay? And I'm going to ask you my three questions, which I usually do. So, first one. If you have to leave the listeners today with one question to journal tonight about themselves or about their life or like a reflective, what would that be?
That's such a good question. The first thing that comes to mind, since we're on the topic of emotions and fear, I would ask, what am I afraid to feel? What have I been afraid to feel? And just get honest. No judgment. Get curious. I think, you know, asking these hard questions are always made a little easier when you welcome them with curiosity instead of judgment. And there's an opportunity there to learn more about yourself as well.
Beautiful. If a parent is listening, what is one of the ways to build a good emotional resilience in the teens?
Acknowledge how they're feeling. I think as adults, sometimes we, since we've been through situations and we have that experience and that wisdom, we are quick to want to fix situations for our teens and to let them know that, like, ah, don't worry about that. Like, everything's going to be okay. Like, you'll see when you grow up, like, this will not even matter. And for kids, that's the worst thing you can say to them because you're invalidating their feelings. And I know I was a little dramatic when I say that's the worst thing you could say, but in the sense of I feel like if we validate how they're feeling and we welcome their emotions, we're teaching them again that all of their emotions are here for a reason. And if they get to learn from their emotions, even better. And you do that by asking them questions. Again, curiosity, leading with curiosity instead of judgment or the ability or the need to want to fix or find solutions. It's just kind of meeting them in how they're feeling right now and saying, you know, why do you feel this way? What is it that makes you feel this way? And you're valid in feeling everything that you're feeling. And talk through them. Talk through it, I should say, with them.
Yeah. You know, when you say it, acknowledge and validate, it sounds so simple. But day in and day out, it's such a hard thing to do.
It is. Because again, as parents, we just want the best for our kids. And we know that maybe this situation is not going to matter in the future, but for right now, this is their whole world.
Yeah.
This is so huge for them. And so if as a parent, you're like, ah, this is not going to matter next week, they're feeling invalidated because they're like, but right now, that's all I can think about. That's all that's in my mind. Like, it's my whole world is about to fall apart because so-and-so said something to me.
Yeah.
And even if it's true what you're saying as a parent, that it won't matter next week or next month, for right now, that's where it matters. And that's where you need to meet them and say, like, okay, I'm here with you. Let's talk through it. Why are you feeling this way? What happened? Like, just help them to unpack it in a safe way and understand that what they're feeling right now, even if it's not going to matter next week, right now it matters. And they need to understand that that's okay, that it matters right now.
Yeah. What if a person is stuck in loop of fear? What are the first few steps to begin that shift?
I think before the steps comes the acceptance of being okay with the fear being here. Because often if you're stuck in a loop of fear, it's because you're resisting the fear or you're judging the fear as being bad. So I think to help us take the steps forward, we first need to accept that fear is here to teach us, to protect us, and that it's okay. And even acknowledging that the way that it's been protecting us so far has maybe been ineffective. And so let's try a new way. And being open to seeing what that is, and that's where the steps come in. So I think having that aligned action relate back to the acceptance is an important piece that we often miss. We try to, you know, power through and take those steps forward regardless of the fear. But I think we need to embrace the fear. And that's what will really help us to move forward.
Thank you so much, Sabrina. It has been such an interesting conversation with you on so many good topics. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for these beautiful questions, for having the platform to discuss these important topics. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you, Sujala.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Discovering Journeys. I would love for this podcast to reach as many people as possible. So please remember to subscribe, rate, and leave a positive review. Share this podcast with someone you think who would appreciate this conversation. Check out the show notes for all the links and details. Until next time, keep embracing your journey and discovering new paths.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.